Blog Talk Radio.
But the point is that I know how to handle these crises.
We are and always will be the United States of America.
Excuse me, Fox News.
A series of tubes.
I think we look pretty good.
I'll get Osama bin Laden, my friends. I'll get him. I know how to get him.
E pluribus unum. Out of many, one.
If some of those jobs are lost in this, so be it.
Thank you, Wisconsin!
Liberals and conservatives, Democrats and Republicans, moderates of all opinions, welcome to Civil Discourse. My name is Eric Brandt, and with me, as always, is former State Senator Peter Baer. Peter, Kalimara.
You must have just been to Greece. I recognize that it is a Greek word, but I can't. Are you meaning calamari or
Kalimara means good morning. Kalispira, good afternoon. And Kalinikta is good night.
Kalimara and to you, and may you enjoy your calamari if you might. You're vegan, so you won't be having
one of those evil vegans. we are back after a two-week hiatus. The last time you were with us, you heard our conversation with Democratic Governor candidate Mary Burke. And then we took a couple weeks off. My wife and I spent some time in Greece. And we are back today, and you can hear us every Saturday going forward at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio for Janesville Community Radio. If you want to hear us live, just go to www.blogtalkradio.com, do a search for Janesville Community Radio, click on their link, and then click on the link for Civil Discourse, and we will be live to your computer. You can also always go back and listen to the archived footage at that same link after the show, or you can go to civildiscourse.podomatic.com. And as I said, we are back. I was in Greece, and we're just going to take a couple of minutes here.
And you do mean the country. Of course, we don't want our listeners to get the wrong idea that either that you're in an old musical production or in something that's used for cars to make them not be noisy.
Correct. Thank you for pointing that out. No one wants to see a musical with me.
You're talking about the place where the democracy sort of came together?
That would be the place, yeah.
Very good place to go.
We spent some time in Athens. We spent four nights in Athens and then four nights on Santorini. And Santorini is gorgeous. It's paradise. But I think that our favorite part was really when we stayed in Athens and we took a few tours and we went and saw the real historical sites. For anyone who's never been to Athens, which I found interesting that I just heard this on Tom Hartman yesterday, that only 1% to 2% of Americans leave North America. So if you take out Canada and Mexico and the Caymans, Jamaica, about 1% to 2% of Americans actually travel abroad, which I thought was striking.
That is a breathtaking statistic to me. I had no idea. I knew it would be a low number, but I would never have imagined that low. But let me just connect two dots that there have been so many studies that I'm sure most of our listeners have heard, and I'm sure you have, Eric, that Americans are, compared to the rest of the world, not only even in the industrialized world, but even compared to the developing world, Americans tend to be geographically more, I hate to use the word, but ignorant than Europeans, Asians, even Africans who are in school. There have been studies that showed that people have actually graduated not only from high school, but in some studies from college. Couldn't identify Mexico on a map of the world or Canada.
I went to school with a girl who couldn't find Canada on the map. That's true.
I mean, that's heartbreaking. And it leads to some others. We won't go there now because it'll take too much time. But the whole issue of investment in education, which has been a theme that in many, many of our programs, and is very much part of Mary Burke's campaign theme for governor, is the need for investment in education. The fact that only remember even President Bush, W. Bush, of course, his father was a soldier in World War II. His father actually did have some much more travel experience. But he had crossed the border into Mexico once or twice, and that was the extent of his international experience when he became president of the United States, if you can imagine that.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe it was W. who also said, I'm excited to go to Latin America because I took Latin in college.
No, not really.
Yeah, seriously. I remember that.
I find that, well, probably the most unbelievable aspect of the statement is that he took Latin in college. But that's another story.
You know, it's kind of interesting that you would point that out, though. Just, you know, the ignorance, I guess, is the correct word, because I think, number one thing that I noticed when we were over there is that we, my wife and I, were very much in the minority, myself especially, in that I am not bilingual. My wife can speak some German, but we met so many people speaking so many different languages, and almost all of them could speak English, whether right. they were from China, Greece, Germany, wherever they were from. Almost everyone could speak both languages.
Welcome to my former world. When I was involved in international business, traveling the world, my observation was exactly the same as yours. Almost everywhere I went, English was almost everybody's second language. I'm not saying that, like in China, you'd go out to the rural areas that are very poor. I suspect that English wasn't as prominent in those places, but in Beijing, Shanghai, you know, and all the rest of the you know, at least the metropolitan areas of the world, everybody speaks English, and pretty well for the most part. What I found most sort of interesting and fascinating is I observed many times people from, let's say, one person from Africa, one from Asia. So the African person's native tongue would be whatever it is, what that was. Let's say Swahili or any number of hundreds of languages. Let's say the Asian person was from China and spoke Mandarin. And I would sit and listen because I found myself, you know, numerous times sitting just overhearing conversations. And they would speak to each other in English because it's everybody's second language. So, and it was kind of funny to listen to people who can't speak each other's language and don't speak English necessarily even all that well, but well enough to have a conversation, talking to each other in English. But just for the record, there's one exception that I found in the world. Not that I've been to every country in the world, but I've been to every continent except Antarctica, and I've been to many, many, many countries, dozens. I mean, like 40. And Russia. They take pride in not speaking English. I could hardly find, well, with the exception, obviously, at hotels where American business people would stay or things like that, they train their staff to speak English. So in those places, yes. But you go out and about, nobody. And when I would meet with government officials, for example, in China, in Beijing, they would speak to me in English, no problem. I'd have an interpreter with me, but we didn't need to use the interpreter most of the time. Russia, I met with a member of the Duma, the parliament. Good thing I had an interpreter. Nobody. And I think it's a very deep cultural thing. I think the antipathy towards English and Americans and our language is profound there.
It's kind of interesting. We're not going to go into the Ukraine situation today, but just to kind of dovetail off what you just said, a difference then between the pro-Russians and then the more pro-Ukrainian people. One of my friends is from Ukraine. She was born there. She moved here 5 years ago. Her family is still there. She speaks perfect English. And she said that in Ukraine, they've got their own language, but when they go to school, they can learn either English or something else that surprised me, like German or something like that. And she obviously chose English, but they do have to take a second language in Ukraine. And that, you know, maybe that's just one more difference between the so-called rebels and the pro-Russians.
Oh, absolutely it is. It's part of the core difference, in fact.
I'm going to get into I want to go back to what you said about the ignorance, because I think that's really that. I think that has a lot broader of an effect. But something else that I think might be involved with that.
It feeds the Rush Limbaugh audience
very well. You're going exactly where I want to go.
That ignorance is central to his entire worldview.
That's exactly right. But something else that I think is maybe causing people in this country not to leave, aside from the fear that the media draws in, where we only see the bad things happening in other countries, is the customs. when we left America, okay, we went on our honeymoon a year and a half ago. We went to Mexico. When we flew down to Mexico, you didn't used to need a passport to go to Mexico, Canada, Caymans, and all that. But that changed, I want to say, in 2009 or something like that.
It was
relatively recent. But anyways, when you go through it, I remember we had to fill out, actually
more like 2005 or 6.
Was it earlier?
Actually, yeah, a little earlier.
But I remember when we got off the plane, we had to fill out some piece of paper that explained where we were going, what flight we were on, what we had, blah, blah, blah. And then we had to go through... We had to go through and get our passport stamped, and then we had to go get our luggage, at which point then we had to go through another customs agent where they randomly searched you.
Yep.
When we went to – and we had the same effect when we came back to America here from Europe. When we were in O'Hare, the longest part of our trip, other than the actual flight itself, we spent 2 hours in customs. When we went to Europe, we flew into Vienna. And we went from Vienna to Athens. And when we flew into Vienna, the Vienna airport is just a maze. I mean, you're expecting a piece of cheese at the end. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But it's well documented. There's signs. It tells you where to go, but it's very twisty. And I'd die if they left me in there alone. I'd never get out. When we got there... before we got to the gate, this maze that we're walking through kind of comes in and funnels in to two customs agents, two guys in booths who you walk up to them. They don't speak to you. You just hand them your passport. They scan it. They stamp it, and you're gone. They never look at your luggage. They don't ask you any questions, nothing. We got on the flight. We got to Athens. And when we got to Athens, there was signs for customs and whatnot, but we walked right out the door. And I was kind of paranoid. I was like, are we going to get in trouble? Were we supposed to stop and talk to somebody?
Nothing. I think I can help you decipher that experience.
And leaving was the exact same thing when we left through Frankfurt.
I can help you decipher that experience, I think, with a reasonable degree of certainty. Because I had the privilege of visiting Europe before the European Union existed as a European Union, and many times subsequent. And I saw the change. You were all within the European Union. Once you enter the European Union, it's like you're each country has its own sovereign borders and stuff like that. Well, except for Crimea. But they aren't in the EU. But once you're already in, you go. I experienced this many times because I would tend to fly out of Minneapolis and fly into Amsterdam. So going that initial entry into Amsterdam, there's a little bit more of a check. Not that rigorous.
This is
post-EU.
Post-EU. Yeah, okay.
Arriving in the U.S. from the U.S. rather into the Netherlands, and there would be even then a pretty mild check, a short customs thing, and only if you fit some profile of someone suspicious would they really give you much of a hassle. But once already in, and then going, then as I frequently had to do, go from, let's say, from there to Brussels, to Paris, to Germany, to Greece. It's almost like you're in one country.
Going from Wisconsin to Illinois.
Once you have entered the European Union and had your initial customs clearance, which is a pretty light check for the most part, except with few exceptions, you're already in, and it's all expedited. That's one of the good things, obviously, and we may talk about it if we talk a little more about Greece, which has been considered, along with Portugal, the two drags on the European Union, Portugal and Greece, financially drags. But once you're in, and you just move. They move you right through.
Even that little bit that we had with just the two guys, we walked up to one. He's in the booth. He stamps it. That was us entering the EU. That was us coming from America. That was our first stop getting into the EU. Just one thing. Coming back was a fiasco. I mean, you've got to go
through
into the U.S.
Oh.
They ask you all kinds of questions. He made me show a second form of ID because since I just got my passport in late 2012, I was 30 pounds heavier. I had short hair and less facial hair. He wanted to see my driver's license because he wasn't convinced it was me. But not one person. I had to show my passport when we got to Vienna, when we flew from Athens to Santorini, then from Santorini to Athens, and then again from when we got to Frankfurt to come back. Not once did anyone question it. Everybody looked at it, scanned it, and it was done. Just like when you fly on an airplane, even if you're staying domestic in the States and you've got to go through that Chertoff porno scanner thing, which my wife and I opt out of, and we take the pat down because I don't want cancer from the radiation of that thing. And I also feel it's just invasive. But they don't do any of that in Europe. None of it. It's just like it used to be pre-9/11 here. They scan all of your stuff. It goes through the x-ray, and you walk through a metal detector. If you set it off, they pat you down real quick, and they send you on your way. That's it. It's nothing like it is here.
We could learn from them. It's pretty draconian. It's pretty draconian here. Coming back into my experience was similar many, many, many times, more than I can remember. I would come back into the United States, mostly through Minneapolis, but sometimes Chicago and different airports. And it's the same. Miami, it doesn't matter which one. The U.S. Coming into U.S. Customs is so much tougher than almost anywhere else. As a matter of fact, I could enter the People's Republic of China. Not exactly the bastion of democracy for the planet or whatever. And as long as you had your visa to enter, which you did have to get for there, it's just there, nothing compared to the U.S., even in China. And I think we could probably learn something from them, but it's also part of our culture. Think of something else. We have, there's no country in the world that has a gun culture like our country. I mean, all the countries in the world combined probably don't have the amount of guns we have in this country. And and of course, then there's the 9/11 history, but customs was pretty tough even before 9/11. It's gotten tougher since. But sometimes you wonder how efficient they are. The people who, they sort of randomly pick, I would find coming into Minneapolis, like sort of every fifth, seventh person, but I don't think they were counting numbers so much as profiling who looked suspicious to them or more likely to have something they shouldn't have. But you really wonder about the efficiency of it. It's all this bureaucratic hassle, but is it actually accomplishing anything more? The Europeans less safe than we are? I don't think that's probably true.
I don't think that's true either. We had a couple, not incidences or anything, but conversations with people, because when you come into Athens is not what you picture. When you see the pictures of Greece with the white and the blue roof and all of that stuff, you know, on the hillsides, that's Santorini, that's the islands, that's the villages. That is not Athens. Athens, you get into the airport, we took the train in, there's graffiti on every building, every post, every sign, every corner, every sidewalk, you name it, everything is covered in graffiti, which around here we, associate with lawlessness. You see it, in rougher parts of cities, but it's not everywhere. It is literally on every single building. And it gives you kind of an uneasy feeling. And when we got off the train, we weren't really sure exactly where to go to our hotel. We knew it was within a block, just not which direction. We ran into some cops, asked them, they pointed us in the right direction. And we were still kind of uneasy. We found the hotel, and I asked the customer service guy if it was a safe area. And I was like, can we be walking around, especially at night? Is this okay? And they literally started laughing. They laughed at us, and they said, yes, you're very safe here. Don't worry about it. And it turned out that they were absolutely right. Sure. When we were taking a couple of tours, we were talking to our tour guides. We took a couple private tours, and so we had a lot of car time. And we were talking to our tour guides about the safety around there. And one of them said that tourism is huge in Greece because it's safe. And he's like, it's safer than other countries. And I asked, what you mean? He's like, well, look what's around us. You've got Turkey, Syria, Egypt. People don't feel safe going there. There's too much going on. You come to Greece.
Syria is a fast agreement there for me. What was it? Egypt,
Turkey.
Well, I personally would probably be a little bit reticent about Egypt too, but I've been to Turkey. And I've been to Turkey several times, Istanbul, Ankara, and quite frankly, I felt very safe there. So I think I want to remind you of one thing. You're talking to Greeks. There's a long history. They were right about.
Yeah, they don't like the Turks. I know, anyway,
they hate them. If you say you're going, if you tell a Greek person that you're going to Istanbul, they say no, Constantinople. because it was still, to them, it's still Constantinople.
Right. There's obviously a lot of history there. But so, when so we were talking like to our,
about the Turks, but the Turkey's pretty safe.
But when we were talking to our other cab driver about the safety, he said the same thing, that you're safe in Greece. And they, and then he made a comment. He's like, it's not that way in America. They know. They watch the news. They know what's going on over here. They know what just happened in California. All of those things. Mm. It's not a secret. And the thing, you know, which kind of goes back before we go to break here to what I wanted to get to about what you were saying about the ignorance, is that other countries tend to pay attention to what we're doing. We don't like to pay attention to what's happening outside of America.
Right.
And Bill O'Reilly, if you remember when Obama, you know, supposedly flopped that first debate, Bill O'Reilly was talking and he's like, so Obama has one more chance. And that was the second debate. And he's like, the third debate is all about foreign policy. Americans don't care about that. And there's some truth to that. Just this morning, I went to the gym and I was listening to a speech from the Commonwealth Club. And I forget her name, but she was she's the previous governor of Michigan, the Democrat, the woman. And she was talking to Duff something or other. He used to be the president or the chair of the RNC out in California. And she was saying that Benghazi is not going to play the role that the Republicans want it to in 2014 or 2016, because the only time that foreign policy seems to have a real genuine impact on our elections is when it's at the right on our borders and when it's really close to an election. Benghazi has been drilled into people's heads. It isn't that big of a deal to most people. Now, personally, I don't think there's anything there at all. I know there's people listening who would disagree, but
the only reason that issue is still being played with the prominence that it is because Hillary Clinton is the probable Democratic nominee for president in 2016, as everybody knows, and she was the Secretary of State at the time that it happened. She also happened to be a very close personal friend of the ambassador who was assassinated and was grieving about that, but that has that's just reality. That has nothing to do with what Limbaugh and the guys are talking about. They're just keeping it alive because of her. They've given up on nailing Obama on it. They just want to try and do anything they can to smear her because she has double-digit leads over every Republican who could be, ever be thought of to run for president. That's really all about. As a matter of fact, what really ticks me off is this: that when Ronald Reagan was president, we had troops in Lebanon, and terrorists came up and blew to pieces hundreds of U.S. Marines. No, Democrats did not go after Ronald Reagan. That Benghazi was, it's a very serious matter, and I don't mean to diminish it, but Benghazi, compared to that, Benghazi was a very small, certainly in terms of loss of life.
Benghazi is a serious matter, but they don't care about Benghazi. They care about the politics of it.
Right.
That's the problem.
But the thing is, the Democrats had their chance to try and, go after Reagan when that happened. But instead, we came together as a country. We grieved about the loss of several hundred of our people. Several hundred. Like 400, not four. Okay.
There was almost a dozen of these attacks under George Bush. And you didn't hear anything about it. There was like one investigation.
Precisely.
Or one hearing, I mean.
As a matter of fact, the number of Americans killed by terrorists since Obama has been president might not even be 1% of the Americans who were killed by terrorists during the George W. Bush administration. You're not going to get that and hear that from Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, or those type guys, but that's the reality of it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to say one more thing about this. Just to point out what a strong president we have, notwithstanding the fact that the right-wing party line is trying to characterize him as weak, ineffective, not respected around the world, and all that. Here's my answer to that. Now, I know a lot of our especially our more left-leaning audience may not be entirely happy with this fact, but it certainly gives the lie to everything that the Republicans are saying about Obama being weak on defense and stuff like that. Bush had some drone attacks, but he started that program, but Obama's, more than 10 times. And we literally, Obama came and Rand said he was going to kill the terrorists. Okay, if we had to go into other countries to do it, we'd go into other countries and do it. He made that promise. We have, you know, at the start of every show that I really enjoy listening to, we hear McCain saying, "I know how to get solve this problem. I know how to deal with these things." Yeah, but when they had the actual debate in 08, and Obama said, "If Bin Laden's in Pakistan, and Pakistan doesn't take care of it, I'll go in and take care of it," and McCain turned around and said, "That just shows how naive you are. You can't do that." Well, guess what? We did it, didn't we? President Obama did it. And did the world go up in arms? Did Pakistan call for an emergency session of the United Nations Security Council because we had crossed into their territory and killed some people by the name of Osama bin Laden and a few of his cronies? No. And when we go into Yemen and take out 20 terrorists, do we have an emergency session called for at the Security Council? No. When we go into Pakistan, there's a lot of countries. Sudan, we go into Sudan in Africa with drones and kill a bunch of terrorists. Do you hear them call for a meeting of the National Security Council at the UN? No. No one makes a peep because this guy's going on. He's not wasting thousands of lives on the ground with soldiers fighting wars that are unnecessary. He is strategically going in and killing the terrorists, and he's doing it. And the Republicans who are saying that he is weak on protecting Americans should be ashamed of themselves. It is so opposite from the truth. This is actually, in my view, the strongest president we've had on national security in recent memory.
That was an epic rant.
But thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. But we got to take a quick break. Stay with us. I'm going to tell you about the most interesting thing that I found out in Greece, and it's going to get local here, so hold on. We'll be right back.
Imagine a business center in downtown Janesville where you can rent office space as you need it, mail delivered to, and you will get a personal call notifying you when that package arrives. Add to that a staffed professional reception area for your clients, fully furnished conference room, office staff with great customer service, and a copy and fax center. All this and more is available to make your office stand out in style, and you only pay for it as needed. Check out www.myoffice-jvl.com.
And we are back. You're listening to Civil Discourse. My name is Eric Brandt. With me is former State Senator Peter Baer. We are live every Saturday. You can listen to us. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, do a search for Janesville Community Radio, click on their link, and then click on the link for Civil Discourse. And just so you all are aware, Janesville Community Radio has been given the go-ahead from the FCC to go ahead and start an FM station in Janesville. We have entered our fundraising stage. So if you appreciate this program and all the other great programs like The Open Mic and Daddy-O's Lunch Bucket and What's Up This Week with Jamie Orlando, email us at civildiscourse2011@hotmail.com or go to janesvillecommunityradio.com and you can find out how you can make a donation, because we need to raise about, I think, around $10,000 to put up a tower, and then we will actually be on FM radio, which will expand our audience and start to bring good educational and progressive politics back to Janesville. Moving forward, I promised you the most interesting thing that I found out in Greece, and it might surprise you. It had nothing to do with the Greek culture, but I checked my email, and I saw that Marquette came out with a new poll showing that Scott Walker and Mary Burke are deadlocked at 46-46 among registered voters. Walker is still holding a 3-point lead amongst likely voters, which means there's a lot of work to do, but this is terrible news for an incumbent governor with presidential aspirations when this election is still, what, 6 months away?
Right. And more terrible news that you and I talked about just before the show started is that the Cook Report, which is one of the most respected ones in the country, one of the most accurate ones overall, and within the last 24 hours, have changed their prediction for the governor's election in Wisconsin from slightly leaning towards Walker to just straight toss-up.
That's a big, big deal. I mean,
this far out.
this far out with a governor who really believes that he's going to be the next president. And
he wants to be. We know that. Whether he believes he's going to be is,
I think
I
he
know.
Believes it. I think
I don't know what he believes. Yeah, you have an advantage over me there, but I know what he says. I have no clue what he believes. But I do believe, except this. I believe that he believes that he's going to run for president. But obviously losing the governorship would put a significant crimp in that plan. And now Charlie Cook has called it, the Cook Report has called it a toss-up. And what do you think Scott Walker's name recognition is right now in the state of Wisconsin? Somewhere between 99 and 100%.
Easily.
Okay. Yeah. Among voters, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. Mary Burke's name recognition, maybe up to 50% by now.
I think I saw that still around 60% say they don't know enough about her. Okay. And she's already
all right,
deadlocked.
So, okay, I said 50, so maybe it was 40. Okay, yeah. Close enough. The point is, half or more of the people still don't even know about her, and there are people who don't even know who she is who are already saying they'll vote for her.
You know, one of the things that I heard that I thought was interesting was that the Koch brothers and Scott Walker's campaigns have really started slamming Mary Burke, yet Walker has gone... He's stayed right around 48%. This poll has him at 46 after all of this. And what they said is probably what's happening is that people don't like Scott Walker. And now he's putting this money that's getting Mary Burke's name out there. And some of these people are just going, oh, there's someone running against him. Well, she's got my vote. Whereas maybe she herself is not the one who's getting to them, but Scott Walker's ads
right.
are.
And they're not even necessarily saying good things about her. In fact, obviously they're not. Mm-hmm. Why would they put on an ad to help her? But they what you're saying is that they are indirectly helping her with a, obviously not intending. Once they figure it out, they'll stop doing it, perhaps, or they'll modify the way they're doing it. But there's an old saying in politics that as long as they spell your name right, it's a benefit to have your name out there, unless it felony conviction is included in the statement. So in other words, even if they use, as long as they spell your name right and say your name, even if they aren't saying good things about you, it's still in the long run better, especially for someone who's building name recognition. And Scott Walker, while he has a base, we can all agree he has a base of over 40%, but how much over 40, we don't know. But he has a base of at least 40% of the people in the state who will just solidly stand with him, then plus some, depending. You know, he's got that. And Mary Burke, on the other hand, is a newcomer to this. And just to be where she is right now, to be in the Cook Report, against someone who is considered one of the, at least probably one of the top five or six Republican presidential prospects, who has already won one election here and a recall, prevailed in a recall election, and that he should be this far out from the election, a toss-up according to the Cook Report. Is grim news for him.
It's extremely bad, and we want to hear what any of you are thinking about this. You can give us a call at 323-580-5769. 323-580-5769. We'd like to hear your thoughts. And Peter, you're not the only one who is surprised by these kinds of polls, because even when Walker was up 48 to 45 among registered voters, Joe Scarborough kind of had a little meltdown. He couldn't believe that Walker was in that tight of a race. Yes, and
he hadn't been paying attention.
When they talked about it on his show, they said, well, he's facing someone with a lot of name recognition. That's just false. That's absolutely false. Mary Burke does not have a lot of name recognition. No, it's just ridiculous.
I mean, she has, I would say this, I think she has decent name recognition for a new candidate for governor at this point in the race.
Now she does. 6 months ago she didn't.
No, 6 months ago she didn't. Had, I'd say less than 10% to 6 months ago. And now closer to 50. But still, that's an acceptable place for someone in her position to be at this point. It's only going to get better for her. It doesn't get better for Walker. Everyone already knows his name.
Everyone already knows him, and women are breaking for Burke at this point.
Go figure.
Exactly. And as more and more millennials start paying attention to this election and turning 18 and, you know, deciding they're actually going to vote this time, it's all going to be bad, yes, which is why they were pushing voter ID so hard.
Exactly. And thank you again, Judge Edelman, for striking that unconstitutional law down. I mean, voter ID, and they haven't even proven a case. Have they proven a single case?
I think they did find
one case.
Literally
one vote. One vote. Mm-hmm. You're going to pass a law that's going to disenfranchise thousands of people because one possibly unlawful vote was cast?
But
one vote?
Yeah. I almost went into our what we wanted to get into in our next segment, but I don't want to go there yet. Some of the reasoning for why Walker might be having so much trouble right now is something that the people on the left, we said this was going to happen. When Walker was coming out saying they was balancing his budget and we were going to have this huge surplus and yada, 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 and we said these are all projected numbers. This is nothing real, but yet he was going out saying it was real. Well, the Journal Sentinel, I'm going to read you a short article right here from May 22nd. The state will spend $559 million more out of its main account next year than it is expected to take in. That's over $500 million more that we are spending that we are not taking in. That doesn't sound like a balanced budget to me.
Well, that's how, that sounds like if it can be established that that is in fact happening prior to Election Day with the full exposure of it. It's a kiss of death for Walker. Kiss of death. That's a lot of money.
The update from the legislator's nonpartisan budget office isn't a surprise. It shows about what was expected after lawmakers and Governor Walker passed a more than $500 million tax cut bill in March. That's only $59 million less than what the shortfall is. The 2013-15 budget remains balanced because year two of the budget is projected to begin on July 1st with a $724 million surplus. But because of the imbalance between the state's expected tax revenues and its budgeted spending, the coming 2015-17 budget has a projected shortfall. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau memo shows estimates for the two-year shortfall come to $642 million. Well, here's what needs to be looked at here and understood. Because the Republicans kicked the can down the road again. They like to say the Democrats spend so much. I once heard Jesse Ventura say that there's no difference between the two parties when it comes to spending. It's that the Democrats put it on the books right away. The Republicans put it on the credit card. And that's basically what Scott Walker did. But what's going to happen? Now, think about this for a second. What's going to happen?
That was
because
a good quote from Jesse.
In 2015 to 2017, Walker, if he loses to Mary Burke, Mary Burke is going to be the one in the governor's mansion. And what do you think the Republicans are going to be talking about? The $500 million shortfall that happened as soon as she got in.
Just like the economic collapse that was already, I mean, literally we were circling the drain as an economy. We were circling the drain, I reemphasize, when on January 20th, 2009, the day that President Obama was inaugurated, the economy was still circling the drain, and now for a few weeks or a couple months nobody was blaming him because it was too obvious, he was too new to be blamed for it. But even it didn't take the Republicans more than about 6 months or so to start blaming it all on him, when it obviously Bush W actually had to practically get on his knees and beg Obama to fly to Washington and get the Democrats to vote for the bailout to save the economy from collapsing totally. And Obama did it at Bush's request. Now that's bipartisanship. Do you think that if Obama was in a situation like this and was requesting Republican help, any would be forthcoming? We already know the answer.
Well, you know, and when you think about what you're talking about in relevance to the Great Depression in 1929, a couple of things to point out that I think are just fascinating is, number one, when FDR won in 32, that's because people knew that it was Republican policies. The crash happened in 29. We had Harding, Coolidge, Hoover. And so we had, 10, 12 years of Republican rule.
No confusion.
By the time it happened, people knew that it was Republican policy, so they voted for Roosevelt. People were actually, you would see hitchhikers holding signs that said, "Give me a ride or I'll vote for Hoover." That's the level of disparity against Herbert Hoover.
That's the kind of popularity no politician seeks.
Now, something else to point out is that Herbert Hoover reached out to Roosevelt for help during the lame duck session, because this back then they didn't get inaugurated till March, and he was elected in November. So there's about 5 months there where Hoover was still running the country. FDR was waiting, but he was already elected. Hoover was trying to get FDR to come help him, and FDR refused. They wanted everything to hit the bottom while Hoover was still in the White House.
That was strategic. I'm saying maybe a little more than I know, but here's what my analysis of that would be, that it was strategic, that it wasn't for the purpose of meanness and vindictiveness towards Hoover, although he was richly deserving of it. It wasn't that. FDR knew what his agenda was. He knew what he was going to be. He knew what the New Deal. The New Deal wasn't something that just came to him in a dream after he was already inaugurated. He knew what was coming, things like Social Security and so forth. A whole new way, the Tennessee Valley Authority. He had a plan to pull this country out of that depression, and to get the support he would need in Congress for such what at that time would be considered radical. Social Security now is a fact of life that everybody accepts. But at that time, there was the Republicans still were calling it socialism, if not communism, and all the rest. So he knew that he was going to have to fight hard to get all the votes he needed in Congress. And the best way to make sure he would get those votes would be to let the economy crash before he got in. Exactly. And then people would be more open to more aggressively.
They weren't just open for it. People were calling for him to pull Stalin powers, to pull dictator powers. People wanted him to just step up and get it done. People were desperate at that point.
Desperate times call for desperate measures sometimes. That's the theory that was probably driving it.
Exactly. We actually have to take one more break here. We will be back in just a minute. So stay with us, and we're going to continue our conversation.
Have you heard about the chocolate available that tastes good and provides natural energy through B12 supplements? Are you looking for a motivation to lose weight or improve your health? Contact Chocolates for Life for free samples of a new cutting-edge supplement that tastes good and is good for you. More information is available at www.chocolates4life.com.
And we're back. This is Civil Discourse. My name's Eric Brandt. With me is Peter Baer. You can hear us every Saturday at 11 o'clock Central Standard Time just by going to blogtalkradio.com. Do a search for Janesville Community Radio, click on their link, and then the link for Civil Discourse. You can also go back to that link at any time and hear the archived footage, or you can go back and listen to our recorded shows at civildiscourse.podomatic.com. And Janesville Community Radio is currently in fundraiser mode as we are trying to build a tower to go on FM radio. All the permits are in place. We just need the funding. And you can email us at civildiscourse2011 if you'd like to learn how to make a donation.
Let me incentivize our listeners in this regard. And building on what you said about hitchhikers saying, pick me up or I'll vote for Hoover. short-term memory loss. What did you just say just before that?
The fundraiser.
Yes, thank you. Okay, imagine the number, whatever number of listeners we have now, how that multiplies. And I don't just mean our show, obviously the whole Janesville Community Radio. The listenership will be multiplied by a factor with the FM tower, right?
We'll hit around 50,000 people.
Janesville is represented in the U.S. Congress by whom?
Half of it is by Paul Ryan, the other half by Mark Pocan.
Okay. Let me address the Ryan half. the signals will extend into the Ryan half and beyond beyond Janesville. I mean, and into further into Ryan's district. Okay. Have you heard that Ryan has a primary opponent?
I did, actually.
Do you know the surname of his primary opponent?
He goes by the name of Segway Jeremy Ryan. Right. He's one of the Solidarity sing along guys.
So right. So there's another Ryan. Now, will enough GOP primary voters be confused And vote for the wrong Ryan so that Paul Ryan loses his primary? No, that's not going to happen.
That was his whole shtick. That's why he wanted to run, because they have the last name.
Of course. But here's the good news if you're not satisfied with Paul Ryan and his policies, which I, for one, am not, and most of our listeners. This guy, Ryan, who's running against him, isn't going to beat him in the primary, but if I were Paul Ryan, I would want to take measures to make sure and get the word out. Don't vote for the wrong Ryan, you know. So it distracts some, while our two of our previous guests who are competing for the Democratic nomination to run against Ryan, while they're busy competing with each other for their nomination, Ryan has to divert some of his energy to trying to educate his Republican base that this other Ryan isn't the real thing and don't vote for him and stuff, and which isn't going to be a heavy lift. I'm not implying that it's going to be a huge heavy lift, but it will distract Congressman Ryan for a period till his primary. He's going to have to pay some attention to that to make sure he doesn't get some sort of embarrassment or even have something be close that shouldn't be close. And so our ability, I mean, assuming that people listen to us, when the ability to get the message out on an FM radio station is a multiple of the of what we can do through this present means. So I urge our listeners to consider that, and if they believe that having a more powerful voice from this side of the aisle is something that they want, please make a contribution to help get that tower built, because we can. That's how elections are won.
That's exactly right. And there is going to be an actual physical fundraiser at the end of the month. I think it's June 29th. I don't want to give any more information at this point because I'm not positive of everything. They're still in the works.
Let me clarify one point, though, so I'm not misinterpreted. The radio station is Janesville Community Radio. It wouldn't be going on as a Democratic partisan station. That would not be wrong.
No.
That would be wrong. We all know what we're talking about, but I want to make sure no one takes out of context what I said to say, they're going to put up a Democratic tower.
Right.
No, that's not what's happening.
Janesville Community Radio is not strictly left-wing. There's all kinds of different shows, from auctioneers to animal shows, shows about astronomy, one that's just about the Janesville community that touches on politics. They touch on different restaurants, different entertainment in the area. Yuri Rashkin, the founder, does a lot of politics, but he does a lot about music and things like that. We are definitely the most outspoken, progressive show on here. But so for those of you who don't like us, by donating, you're not just promoting us. You're promoting a lot of things that will help the Janesville community. For those of you who do like us, you are pushing a progressive program that will help to inform people in Janesville, because 92.1 and Wart tend to fade in and out when you're in the Janesville area. 92.1, depending on where you're at, will kind of come in. Then it gets bumped up by a country station. But the point is that it's a great radio station. It's a great opportunity for Janesville. And Janesville is the kind of community that really needs to get some new lifeblood into it at this point, and JCR might be the way to do that. So we're asking anyone, whether you can donate $1, $100, $10,000, whatever you feel like doing, would just be very much appreciated. Back on to the subject at hand, though. There's a lot of politics yet to talk about. Scott Walker, Peter, is reportedly in negotiations with the prosecutors from the John Doe investigation to settle this thing. And it is getting a lot of people, even on his side, pretty riled up. The Wisconsin Club for Growth. And this is from JS Online. Now,
that is for growth of the bank accounts of the wealthy, in case anyone was wondering what Club for Growth really means.
It's a Koch brothers group.
Yep.
And JS Online said that Wisconsin Club for Growth attorney David Rifkin asked Schmitz's attorney whether Schmitz was attempting to reach a settlement. This is talking about the Scott Walker campaign. He said that the settlement would violate Judge Randa's order. Specifically, Rifkin raised the question of whether a settlement might preclude Walker's campaign from associating with the Wisconsin Club for Growth. His statement reads, "Let me be perfectly clear. A settlement that seeks in any fashion to further the John Doe investigation by violating Mr. O'Keefe's or the club's speech, the club for growth he's talking about, or associational rights would be a blatant violation of the preliminary injunction," Rivkin wrote to Randall Crocker, Schmitz's attorney. "Your client cannot, via settlement or other maneuvers, attempt to circumvent the injunction. At least he cannot do so without seriously risking a judgment contempt." Now, the Wall Street Journal, which is also relatively conservative, accused Walker of putting his personal ambitions above moral principles, stating, "Sounds like Mr. Walker has to decide whose side he's on, his own or the larger principles he claims to represent." And this reminds me of something else that I want to play a short clip for you, because this is Republicans kind of going after Walker, saying that he's all about it in for himself. Now, do you guys remember hearing this one?
"I think Walker's working for Walker."
That sounds like Mike Ellis.
That's Mike Ellis. Let's hear it again.
Amazing how you can...
"I think Walker's working for Walker."
Walker's working for Walker. Even Republicans are now questioning Scott Walker's motives, whether he is in it for Republican values, if you want to say there are any,
and you're not suggesting,
or if he's simply there for Scott Walker's
You're not
career.
Suggesting that the Wall Street Journal leans Republican, are you?
At least the editorial page does.
Hmm. And they said what? About this?
They said, "Sounds like Mr. Walker has to decide whose side he's on, his own or the larger principles he claims to represent."
I have news for you. I'm glad you're sitting down right now, Eric. He's already decided. He's decided that he's for himself. I have to correct my earlier thing that I said. I have no idea what he believes. The truth is, I have no idea what he believes about a lot of things, because what he says and what he believes aren't necessarily consistent. But there's no question in my mind whatsoever, based on all the observations. These are just observations on my part of what has happened to date. Walker is, Mike Ellis is exactly right in saying that Walker is for Walker. This whole thing is strictly to protect Scott Walker. I ranted about that federal judge who they're relying on.
Judge Randa?
Yes, who actually ordered the destruction of evidence and was slammed by the Seventh Circuit on that part, which has said, and this is now irreversible, that judge does not have the authority to order the destruction of evidence, period. That part is over. So even the evidence will continue to exist, which is about as welcome to Scott Walker as having a pile of radioactive waste in his office. Okay? As a matter of fact, I would say that's probably a fairly accurate analogy to what that the evidence is likely to be for him. So he's in it entirely to preserve his political ambitions. There's no argument to be made for any, under federal law, for any connection between the third-party organizations such as Club for Growth and campaigns. There cannot be coordination. Now, you know, we may disagree. I certainly do. I know you do, Eric, with the Citizens United decision that calls the Koch brothers trillions speech and so on and so forth. But the Supreme Court never went so far as to say it's okay for the campaigns and the third-party groups to literally coordinate. It's still federal law that cannot happen. And yet, Walker is trying to protect himself from accountability for that, which is unlawful, period, under federal law, even under this skewed and perverse Supreme Court, perverse in its majority, not as told everybody on it. That's enough. I've read enough.
Yeah, Walker is he's just perpetuating this entire thing. The harder they fight it, the more that comes to light, the more headlines that are out there about this thing. Which that alone, if he's willing to do that, that has to tell you what is actually there. There's something at the core here. There is a there with this. This isn't like Benghazi. There is something going on, because the Democrats are not the ones who are pushing this thing. Scott Walker is the one who's keeping this one in the limelight. And when you're talking about Walker being about Walker and Ellis saying that Walker's working for Walker, I think that some of the biggest proof of that is simply his campaign slogan, "Stand with Walker." What was the left wing slogan, it was stand with Wisconsin. Stand with your neighbors, with your family, with your community, with your towns, with your county. Walker's own signs separate him from that. You've got one yard that says stand with Wisconsin and another one that says stand with Walker. And I think the Democrats missed an opportunity. They missed an opportunity to exploit that Walker. And then he goes on to say to divide and conquer. Okay, this guy is not about Wisconsin. This guy is not about the United States. This guy is about being a rock star. That's all he is. He just he wants the attention.
Well, it's worked well for him so far. He apparently likes what he's experiencing and would like to keep it going. He's a relatively young man. This election is going to be, in my view, definitive for him, the election with Mary Burke, because if he actually wins that election, then he will be a contender for the Republican nomination for president. I don't think he'll get it. He's too boring, as Chris Matthews pointed out. But on the other hand, vice presidential spot could be very possible for him. That would be this two election presidential elections in a row of the Wisconsin vice presidential candidate when there never had been one before, which is kind of just a little footnote. But if he loses the election to Mary Burke, he's toast. At least he's toast for the 2016 presidential run. No one's going to take seriously a candidate who was just tossed out of office as governor to
Rick
be there.
Santorum. He didn't get the nomination, but he made it a long way. He's going to try it again, too.
And he's going to try it again.
But Chris Matthews said he was boring, huh? Because Matthews is not a Walker supporter, but he's the only public figure that I keep hearing who keeps throwing that name out there because he sees that Walker is going to be that dark horse. But he said he's going to be boring, huh?
He said he's too boring to be a successful presidential candidate, although he sees him as a real contender for the Republican nomination.
Unless Ryan is the one who gets the ticket because they can't be from the same state.
That's right.
That would open up a whole other can of worms for them.
Well, if Mary Burke wins the election, then we won't have to deal with that.
Which is looking more and more likely, and unfortunately that takes us to the end of the program. That is going to do it for our show today. I want to make sure to thank Janesville Community Radio for this platform, and remember, they are raising funds so that we can put up a tower and assemble our complete studio so that we can be on FM radio in the Janesville area. Thank you to 350 Madison, the Economowoc Dems. Thank you to the Rock County Progressives, and thank you to all of you for listening to us. Please be sure to tell all of your friends and go to iTunes to subscribe to our podcast. It'll come right to your account every week, and you can hear it. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us, civildiscourse2011@hotmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, @CDiscourse. Check us out on Facebook, Civil Discourse. That is going to do it for today. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Eric.